Here on Unsinkable, the Titanic podcast, I have never been one prone to urgent or day of or even week of Titanic news items. This podcast has always been more about slow and methodical research and reading and cultural history, whether it be of the ship or of the film or both. But today I bring you a conversation that I do term a Titanic emergency meeting because as a voice in the Titanic community at this point, I feel like it's really important to touch base with you all about a couple of things that have popped up on social media and the news related to Titanic. One being the resurgence again of the news that billionaire Clive Palmer is planning to build a Titanic 2, a replica of Titanic that will set sail, according to him and his calculations, in a few years. But as many of you know, this has popped up before, and he's popped up before. And this news story and news cycle on this begs so many questions related to Titanic's relevance, how Titanic is monetized, so many things. Also, there's a brand new movement, mostly on social media, in terms of a Raise the Titanic effort. I was floored when I saw this terminology used because, as you know, Raise the Titanic was a book, a fiction book by Clive Cussler and a film adaptation. And it's about the fictional raising of the entire ship. So using that phrase just pulls forth a great many cultural references for us Titanic people. And it's really kind of wild to be in the year 2024, right in many ways at the same spot that people were in 1912 and 1913, these questions of how and when and how much of Titanic could be quote unquote raised. Many pieces from the ship already have been, of course. But to answer all of these questions, which I think are so important because the soul of them is really a question of how we memorialize things, how we commercialize things, and I think how we view ourselves as a society today. To talk about all of this, I have Pablo Ohana on again. He came on the podcast a few months ago, at the beginning of this season, to talk about RMS Titanic Inc., Titanic Belfast, memorializing Titanic, the ethics of that. And it was one of the most popular episodes that I've ever posted. The download numbers were some of the highest I've ever seen. And I received some of the best feedback that I've ever gotten on an episode. Pablo is, of course, an award-winning public relations, marketing, and communications manager. He works in the UK and now also in the US. He has a broad range of experience in politics, history, society, culture. He is an expert on Titanic artifacts and their memorialization. He is a certified Titaniac, and I am fortunate enough to call him a dear friend now. I bring you a conversation we had that we termed emergency meeting because we do discuss all of the news brewing in the Titanic community, and we lay out the important and often controversial, fair warning, and blunt questions related to it. Before I get you to interview, I don't even know if the word, it's more a conversation, a chat for Titaniacs. But before I get you to that, just a reminder that my live show is on April 13th at the Titanic Museum in Pigeon Forge. It is free thanks to the generosity of the museum. That's amazing, but you do have to register, and that link will be in the show notes. So if you are in Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Ohio, it's so many spots that are drivable to Pigeon Forge in this area. And I would love to meet you if you are a listener and are able to pop over that day. There is also a roundtable that afternoon that I'll be moderating as well. You can go to the link. It'll take you to the museum's page. You'll see all of the Titanic sinking anniversary events, many of which I am involved in. And like I said, I'm excited to see many of you. We will have photo ops. We will have book raffles. Stephen Schwankert will be there to talk about The Six, which is one of the most popular Titanic documentaries ever made and so important in the historiography. We will be sharing stories that are underserved in the Titanic history. So please come if you're able. It is a live in-person event. If you are not able to come live, consider joining Patreon because I will be live streaming exclusively to Patreon the day of, and it will be replayable exclusively on Patreon. Also consider joining Patreon just because you love the show and you want to contribute to it staying independent. It's also when you contribute to Patreon, to be quite frank, it's also supporting my research and writing as I work on my book and I work on many Titanic projects to try to really, a lot of the things that Pablo and I talk about, try to bring those to fruition in the Titanic community and yeah, just tell the stories that haven't been told and to ask questions that haven't maybe been asked. So yeah, as always, link to Patreon will be in the show notes, live show registration in the show notes. I have heard from the museum. We are low on space already. So if you're on the fence, make a decision. I can't wait to see you. And ooh, last thing, which is so fun, we have brand new merch. There is an artist named Greg who is a brilliant artist in general and also does Titanic related work. And we connected on Instagram. Instagram's great for things like that. And it's his new design for Unsinkable the Titanic podcast. We've got shirts, we've got mugs. They've already been rolling out from Bonfire and people are messaging me and letting me know the quality is really high. So that link will be in show notes as well. The proceeds are split between me and Greg. So it's supporting the pod and it's also supporting an independent artist. All right. I have babbled. Thank you so much for being the best podcast audience that has ever existed in the world. If you have a minute, drop a rating or review. I sound like a game show host now. Okay, bye. Listen to me and Pablo. This is a really fun and important conversation and unedited. I'm just throwing it at you. Here we go. I'm LA Beatles and this is Unsinkable. Enjoy. Technical difficulties hopefully are over and Pablo is back with us to have a what we can only term emergency Titanic meeting. the last week I have spent sort of running that joke around in my head and thinking about all of the new Titanic news items way too much. And I finally decided, yes, we probably do need an emergency Titanic meeting. And you are the best person to be here for that. So welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I don't know where to begin, but I guess I will begin by summing up where we are in the Titanic news cycle. So within the last week, I have received countless emails and messages, as I'm sure a lot of us in the Titanic community have, about a couple of things particularly. One, that the news of, is he millionaire or billionaire, Clive Palmer from Australia?
Billionaire.
Probably billionaire, yeah. To rebuild the Titanic. He has resurfaced and newly claimed that his plans to set sail with a Titanic 2 are on track, according to him. Although this has popped into the news cycle many times before. So that's interesting. And then also that there is a new movement, mostly on social media up to this point. But I think the interest is really peaked for many in the Titanic community about a new Raise the Titanic movement, which sounds rather sensationalist because that title immediately bears in mind, Raise the Titanic, Clive Cussler's novel, the accompanying film from the 1980s. I think it's 1980. And so I think that title in particular, and maybe this is on purpose, just really brings to mind this very almost a mythological, almost a sensationalist idea of like Titanic emerging from the ocean and being raised. Although I they're not talking about raising the whole thing, just part. So we'll get to that. So we find ourselves in a news cycle with Titanic that feels to me very similar historically to where we were in 1912. No joke. You know, that after the disaster, there were, whether it's news articles, interviews, films being made, this sort of wild and frenetic idea that she could be, the ship could be reclaimed in some way, that we could find pieces of her, or that we could, you know, in 1912, it's like, can we recover the bodies? What can we get out of her? And I feel like we're right back there. We're right back to what pieces of Titanic can we claim for ourselves? Who wants them? Why do we want them? And how do we make money off of Titanic? Because I think that is the question at the root of all of this as well, is people obviously want to make money off of Titanic. So if we start with, let's start with maybe a little bit on Clive Palmer and Titanic too. What do you think the global response is to this? Do you think the average person is excited by this and not offended by this? Or do you think that the average person is offended by this? Because the idea of a complete replica of Titanic setting sail on the same path that Titanic took, it seems like karmically challenging, you know, in my opinion. So tell me what you have known about this, what you have thought about this in the past, and what you think his kind of motivations are. I just would love to get a sense. We've never talked about it before. I'd love to get a sense from you how you think this has been received, Titanic 2.
Well, I think taking a small step back, so you mentioned about the Raise of Titanic. There is the Clive Palmer's Titanic 2. There is also the sort of replica full scale of Titanic being built in China, which would be landlocked and an attraction. There's still ongoing stuff with RMS Titanic Inc. bringing up artifacts. There's the new film. At the moment, we are in an incredibly active time in Titanic news. Like, there is so much happening with Titanic at the moment, which on the one hand, is a testament, right, to her enduring legacy and the fact that we're still here talking about it. And there are so few things and subjects that endure the way that Titanic does. And that is a well-trodden path. We've talked about that many times. But it really is... It's a fascinating part of Titanic's legacy that it just never goes away, like never goes away. And I was just saying the other day, actually, I was talking to someone through that currently right now, there are 30 Titanic exhibitions, experiences, museums around the world. How many subjects have 30, you know, things dedicated to it, and all of them sustainable? I think the concern that I have initially about the Titanic 2 is that it is honestly the person behind it, to be blunt. Clive Palmer is a really controversial Australian figure. He's a billionaire, but he was a politician, a really right-wing politician. I'm not talking kind of like UK conservative right-wing. I'm talking like hardcore right-wing. And he has kind of pushed a lot of conspiracy theories, and he's also had a lot of ideas for things he wants to build, like dinosaur parks and these kinds of things. So he has a history of announcing what feels like deliberately controversial ideas, basically just for attention.
And anyone that's followed. Just to point out that there is an extreme parallel there between him and the oil magnate billionaire that tried to find Titanic in the 80s and was racing Ballard to find it in the 80s. And I'm looking up his name. I'll see if I can't find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But this is, talk about history repeating itself. I mean, in the 70s and 80s, there was this big Texas oil man with tons of money that
thought he would find Noah's Ark and thought he would find Titanic. And so there seems to be, that would be an interesting episode to do, would maybe to be profile both of them and find the parallels. But I actually, this is why you're amazing. I actually didn't know this about Clive Palmer. I haven't done a ton of reading on him. So anyway, go ahead. But that is wild how similar that those stories are.
It's I think it ties into the sort of wider conversation around, we talked last time I was on about the sort of commercialization of Titanic. And there is, I know you don't hate to do this, but I hesitate to bring in gender and race and things, but it is always a white man that is behind these projects. And it is always driven by financial gain. It is not driven by the memory of Titanic and telling that story. And I think, we don't want to go into it so much because we did that last time, but I think, when you look at how different cities, places, experiences, people tell the story of Titanic and how they do that, and you can get a sense of whether they're doing it for financial gain or whether they're doing it because they really want to tell that story and they really care about, sharing knowledge and informing people and taking people on that journey. And I think my fear with Titanic 2 is firstly that it has been announced and re-announced 4-5 times. It was originally supposed to, it first kind of publicly came around in the centenary, so April 2012. That's how long ago this has been going on for, and nothing has really happened. And it has always been, delays because of COVID or delays because of something or other. And I think there is a wider kind of concern for me that with Clive Palmer's history, it is just about trying to use Titanic as a way to gain profile for himself.
And if you think about it, it wouldn't actually take, particularly for a billionaire, it wouldn't take that much money or that much research these days to build it. I mean, think about the cruise ships that go out now. I mean, we're going to Disney World in May. And so I have followed, Disney accounts, and I have a couple of friends that work in Disney travel planning, and the cruise ships that Disney builds now to go out are 2-3 times the size. That's just a general estimate. Nobody get mad at me. I haven't looked at the data, but they're, I've seen the imagery you'll see on Instagram once in a while, where it will show like the shadow of Titanic and what its size is next to one of these huge new cruise ships. It's actually so much smaller. So I would argue that if you had that much money and you had a team of researchers and you had a team of builders and you had a good spot to build, I think it would be fairly easy to build that ship again. And I say easy, not as someone who can do it myself, but I know that the experts exist, and I think it's very feasible. And so if in 12 years he hasn't done it, that tells me that this is just a publicity stunt.
Well, and also he is not short of money. His net worth in 2023 was nearly 24 billion Australian dollars.
So you could, Cameron built the outside of the ship in Rosarito, Mexico in 1996 on much less of a budget. And so to me, and I hadn't put that, I didn't put that together in my head until I started to hear you talk about it. And this is why conversations are so great to work out these ideas and themes. But it could, in 12 years, it could be done, but it's not done. So why is it not done? That's the question. If it really is a true goal of his, there's no reason it's not done by now.
No, and I think it's an interesting one, because I remember when it was first announced in 2012, a lot of people messaged me and were like, would you go on this? And I suppose, I don't know how much of this plays a part in it, because they actually in 2012, when they launched this project, they also had a waiting list. So you would go onto the website and add your name to be on the waiting list of the first people on the voyage. And of course, it's going on the same voyage and the same days and all the rest of it. And I don't know whatever happened to that. And the company which he sort of founded, in inverted commas, which is Blue Star Line, it never really has materialized into anything more than just rendering. And I think the funny thing is it does tie into this conversation around the everlasting conversation, which is Titanic's just ability to endure everything. And it is encapsulated in that every time this is re-announced, the media lose their minds because the media is like, right, we have a Titanic story, and nothing spreads like Titanic mania. And so you will see these same images, these 3D rendered images and CGI over and over and over and over and over again, and they're just put back out. Mm-hmm. And people get really excited, and some people are offended. And but it has never gone anywhere. In 12 years, it's never gone anywhere. And my concern is that, I mean, now it's set to something like set sailing like 2027, I think it is. And it just seems, for me, it feels like another person exploiting Titanic's legacy just to make a name for themselves and make some money. And that is outside of the conversation of whether it is
ethically, right, karmically, well,
to do that.
Which is in itself a whole nother conversation, because, you know, the example I hear used the most in terms of how we romanticize Titanic and how that's not great is 9/11, right? Like, that's the constant analogy that you hear, right? That that you wouldn't romanticize 9/11, you wouldn't write a romance movie around 9/11, you wouldn't recreate, you know, and so that analogy does sort of work here. It's like, this is a horrible, bloody, terrible tragedy. You wouldn't reenact 9/11 and bring people into a building, and, you know, and so I've never loved that analogy, but I think for this one it actually works quite well. It is very disconcerting to me to think about that. I mean, people have asked me if I would go on something like that. I just unequivocally, like, the answer is no, I would not. I think not only are you in a very comical sense tempting fate, right? And there's a lot to laugh about there. And I'm not really concerned that the ship's going to go down at the exact spot in the Atlantic Ocean. That's not going to happen. I doubt it, you know, not with modern technology and processes. But what bothers me is this idea that you would put on the clothes, eat the food, live this life knowing that what everything you're romanticizing is about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people going into a cold ocean and freezing to death and leaving behind children. You're talking about, you know, the thing about Titanic nobody really wants to talk about is you're talking about, like, children freezing to death in the ocean, right? And so I mean, you're a super fan of the movie. I'm a super fan of the movie. I will die on that hill forever, best movie ever made. But one of the reasons the movie is so good is because Jim Cameron gives that empathy and that song. Like, the last hour of that movie is about how horrific it was. It is memorializing and showing how just beautifully sorrowful and fearful and bloody and dangerous that scenario was. And so I think he shows respect to that process.
Yeah.
That's what now, yes, the love story does romanticize the whole event. But I think if you sit down and you watch the 3.5 hours, it's, you know, he's paying respect and in the proper ways. And so, yeah, it's very disturbing to me, like, the whole concept. Well,
we spoke about this last time, I won't kind of hammer the point too much, but the point that I make whenever I talk about the kind of commercialization versus memorialization versus, you know, the romance of Titanic and sort of stuff, is that actually the theme in James Cameron's film, and people's minds are always blown when I tell this to people, but everyone thinks of Jack and Rose, right? But the very last words in a near three and a half hour film is from Brock Lovett. It's mm-hmm. not from Jack and Rose. It's not from these two main characters. It's from not a tangential character, but a character that is not like the sort of, they are not the person on screen the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, his Brock Lovett's screen time is probably, what, 17 minutes in a three and a half hour film? Yeah.
But he is the one who gets the last words. And those words are, 3 years I've thought of nothing but Titanic, but I never got it. I never let it in. And the point of that, for me anyway, the way that I interpret that, is James Cameron being, you know, portraying this character as he spent his whole career, you know, going on, trying to find this heart of the ocean and make a quick buck out of Titanic. And actually, he comes to the end, he's confronted with the horrors of that night, and he realizes, you know, I never got it. I never got that Titanic is a real tragedy that happened to real people, that ruined, obviously killed a lot of people, but ruined the lives of the people who survived and those around them. for eternity, essentially. And, you know, places like Belfast and Southampton are still, you know, they still feel that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yes, Titanic, James Cameron's Titanic romanticizes the story. But actually, I think the central theme of that film is trying to tell you there are real stories here that you need to confront, and that just trying to make a quick buck on this story is not the way to do it. And I think Clive Palmer falls very much into that category because he doesn't have, you know, I mean, if you really want to be blunt about it, you can compare James Cameron to Clive Palmer. James Cameron spent his whole career previous to Titanic and since Titanic still into Titanic, doing documentaries.
Oh, yeah,
down
he's
to
worth his salt. I mean, that's what that's what bothers me the most about it, is that someone like Clive Palmer, I don't, you know, that if, listen, if James Cameron, this would never happen based on what I know about James Cameron. If James Cameron came forward and said, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to rebuild the ship. I'm going to use all of the designs that I used in the 97 movie. I'm going to do the china. I'm going to do the carpets. We're going to do this right. And I'm going to build the whole thing. And you can come and you can sail on it, or you can, you know, treat it as a museum. I don't know that I think that my reaction would be different. I don't know if I'd be 100% in, or if I'd need to think about it some, or I think I would still have concerns about the
but
car
at
all.
But it's about your intention, right?
It's the intent. It's about, like, but I would know it's because he loves it. He loves it with every fiber of his being, and he understands the magnitude of it. And I would know that his motivation would be coming from this very heartfelt passion that he's obviously had for 30, 40, 50 years. Yeah. And But like you're saying, with someone like Clive Palmer, it's only about the bottom line. It's only about the money to be made here. And to me, that's very disturbing. Yeah.
Well, and you can see that, you know, the rest of Clive Palmer's history is things like wanting to rebuild a Zeppelin and, like, you know, build a Jurassic Park, you know, all these kinds of things they're not. As you say, if James Cameron was suddenly like, I'm going to do this Titanic thing, well, you know, to some degree, fine, because in terms of, you know, people who are knowledgeable and passionate about the subject, as you say, there aren't a ton of people who are more on it than James Cameron is. And you can say what you want about the film, and you can say what you want about aspects of the film or whatever it is, but ultimately, his heart is in the right place. He knows what he's talking about. With Clive Palmer, you cannot say that, because there are too many other instances where what he has done or said is fundamentally, first and foremost, about making money. And I don't have a problem with making money. And, you know, as we spoke about last time, there are museums, places like Titanic Belfast and Pigeon Forge and all the rest of it, they make money, but they're also telling a story, and they're giving you, you know, an authentic journey through Titanic's kind of life in exchange for that. Whereas this feels just about trying to make some money. And
yeah, I mean, everybody should be compensated for their work. You know, somewhere like, obviously I work with Pigeon Forge, or somewhere like Belfast. I mean, absolutely. Like, it's like, I'm not anti making money. And I think if you work hard and you build something and you want to tell a story, at Pigeon Forge, the product is, I walk in there. I mean, you just went, you know, you walk in, you see this amazing, like, half of the ship, a fourth size replica. I always mess that up. That's beautiful. You get to experience that. And what you're paying for is the experience of walking in, of experiencing the grand staircase, of seeing artifacts, of being given that passenger card and walking through that experience. What did it feel like? You walk onto the bridge, you walk out into the room where it's
educating
cold
yourself as well. I think that's the key, is that you can... It's totally up to you how you experience Titanic.
Yes.
If you experience Titanic because you are just interested in the films, or you're just interested in the wreck, or you're just interested in the construction or Belfast connection, or whatever, fine. Titanic is, you know, we've talked about this. Titanic is nobody's to own. Mm-hmm. Like, you can make of Titanic what you want it to be. You want to be interested in one section, not the others, fine. But those kinds of places are about telling the whole story, that you can be like, okay, I'm going to really focus on this bit, and this is going to be really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Clive Palmer, that is not what he's doing. You know, the Zeppelin thing didn't come to fruition. Surprise, surprise, Titanic.
He's just jumping to whatever the next thing is. He's a collector of, I mean, sorry, like, I know him, but he seems to me the type of person that's like just a collector of interesting stories and whatever pops into his brain at any given moment, you know, I don't know. I just, I think this is going to be a great way to transition to the other stuff we're talking about too in a second. But the problem that I have is not with making money off of Titanic. Obviously, I support the museum at Pigeon Forge by working with them. I collaborate with them. I'm not a hypocrite. What I have a problem with is this growing sense there seems to be, and I see it with social media accounts, I see it with things like this news resurfacing, there seems to be this idea that Titanic is just a moneymaker and it's gone into a category of, okay, you know, 9/11 is there, a lot of other things are there that if we, this is a buzzword, this is a buzz moment, this is this like ghost event, that if we just reference it, you just say Titanic and it will make money. And, you know, with the podcast, I've had, you know, people ask me all the time with sort of a like, ha ha ha, you're making money off of Titanic. Now, I mean, let's be clear. No, not really, not much, you know, and like the podcast sort of just sustains itself. And some of the work I do just barely, like I'm not doing this podcast to make money and I'm not making much money at all. I think there is just this notion that Titanic is this pool of money that is out there to get. And I actually fundamentally disagree. I think if you have a location like a Belfast or a Pigeon Forge, you and I have talked about this, then yes, the money's there. Because if you have a good spot and there's foot traffic, you're going to bring people in that say to themselves, wow, yeah, I have always wanted to know more about that. And maybe today's a good day to go in and be a little more educated about this. And that's great. You need real estate. But in terms of a concept, whether you're writing a book or making a podcast or a social media account, there's not some big pool of money there. And it really bothers me because there's a lot of people that seem to think there is. And I can tell you from doing this podcast, there is not. There's not.
But it's also that it shouldn't be the primary objective of your interest in Titanic. And I think, you know, we spoke last time quite extensively about RMS Titanic Inc. And they had, you know, the people involved in there who had spoken very openly that they were sitting on billions of dollars and that was their primary motive. And they were, you know, they weren't making any bones.
Yeah,
you know, that's not an interpretation of what they said. That is what they said. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you, as you say, you have to be really careful because, yes, Titanic in some respects is a massive money earner, and you know it did pretty well for James Cameron.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that again, that was a product that people could experience and live and fall in love with, and that is
also
its own entity now.
Of course, and as we spoke about last time, you know, you and I love that film, but we also have some critique of it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the benefits of that film in terms of opening the story of Titanic to the broadest possible audience outweighs those negatives. So yes, there are bits of the film that we think are perhaps could be changed, and you know, Murdoch and the rest of it. But ultimately, the way in which that film opened Titanic up to an, you know, to a whole generation, and still does 25 years later, people are still discovering that film and then discovering Titanic and going to Belfast or going to Pigeon Forge or going to these places. And that's a great benefit. But with something like Titanic 2, that is, for me, it's not where it lands. And it's interesting that I actually read a couple of days ago, I was reading up about Titanic 2 because, you know, as you know, it resurfaced in the news. And Cunard actually responded and basically said, you know, we don't think that this is respectful or appropriate. Yeah. And most people will know, but obviously White Star Line folded into Cunard.
Well, yeah, and they do. And I will tell you, though, too, I don't know if you've seen it. Cunard does, in their advertising, call their room service. It's like White Star service. So they are capitalizing on that as well, which, again, I have less of a problem with because guess what? If you buy a ticket on one of their ships, you're on a ship and you're getting an experience. Yeah. And the product there is like, you are sailing the seas, you know,
they also still take the time to remember Titanic. And I know that depending on when the day falls, but either the 14th or 15th of April every year, they raise the White Star Line flag and they like take a moment to remember the tragedy and things like that. So I think there is always a fine line, right? And we're sitting here with our favorite film being one of the, you know,
I know. And like James Cameron has made so much money off of Titanic. He like
so it's not
bought New Zealand. So
and we're in agreement that like it's not about saying you cannot make a penny out of Titanic.
No,
because
of course.
Ultimately,
I'm all about people being compensated for their work. And like,
of course,
you know, take any fill in the blank Titanic museum. There are people that go in there every day and work really hard, and they deserve mm-hmm. to be paid well and compensated for their work. You know, even doing the podcast, like I don't make much, but I support the idea that like I should mm-hmm. be benefiting financially in some form or fashion from this, because I do put in a lot of work. And doing a podcast is way more work than I think people realize, you know? And so, yeah, I'm the biggest fan of people being compensated. You know, I think if you were working hard on a product or an experience, that absolutely, like, I've never advocate for someone working for free in any realm. I think what gets me is like the social media accounts that pop up that are just, we're going to put Titanic, you know, content out there and hope that hope to get 20,000 followers or 100,000 followers so I can monetize my Instagram. To me, I don't know where are we with that? Like, what has Titanic become if that's what's going on? I think those are the ones that really bother me. You know, turning it into an advertising thing, and those are sort of nebulous thoughts.
But it comes back to intention, right? Yeah. It comes back to intention. And if Clive Palmer had like a lifelong obsession with Titanic and wanted to tell that story and wanted to,
like, ever since he was a child, he's dreamed of, you know, maybe.
Or like really wanted to authentically kind of give people the experience of, you know, because I think there is an argument to be made that the era of kind of luxury liners and that, you know, the Titanic era of travel has kind of been lost. You could make that argument and you could say, do you know what? I just want to bring back that kind of, you know, pre-social media, pre-distraction, kind of people coming together on a kind of, you know, a great ship where they talk and they eat great food. Like, you could make an argument that I could probably buy into, like, that you could probably, you know.
That would be incredible. I don't know that you need to call it Titanic 2, you know. I mean, I'm the biggest advocate of this. I mean, I have friends that recently have been like, wow, it took you a long time to message me back on Instagram. And my response is, yeah, I'm trying days where I don't have my phone in my hand all day because I'm trying days where I don't check Instagram until maybe right before I'm going to bed sometimes, because it's too much. And I do have nostalgia for the days before this is how we communicated. And I have like my paperback copy of the Outlander novel I'm reading, and I sit on, you know, a hammock in my yard on the side of a mountain, because I do have nostalgia for those times. And so, yeah, I could totally get behind if someone sold me the experience of sailing, you know, still with the modern safety that we've come to expect from sailing. But yeah, I mean, I could maybe get behind that if it was beautifully done, aesthetically pleasing, done in the right way. But I don't know that it would need to be called Titanic and we need to go like on the exact same route.
But it's also, again, it comes back to intention. That is not what the intention is here.
No.
Frankly, I mean, I think to some degree, maybe this is a pointless conversation because I'm not sure it'll ever happen. I mean, it was, you know, only a week or so re-announced that he announced, it re-announced that it was going to happen.
I'm going to start.
Still hasn't selected a shipyard.
No,
so
I'm going to start re-announcing things. I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start announcing like a big thing every 3 years.
I just re-announced it.
Yeah, like I'm going to announce today that, you know, I really am going to try to get Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet on this podcast. Here's my big announcement. That's my goal. We're going to do, and then just like every 2 years, I'll just like re-announce that and do like hashtags.
Yeah.
Well, that's it's a good segue into the other big thing and sort of the Titaniac news community, which is we don't know much about it yet. It's very nascent, but there is a new social media account / you know, kind of website movement called Raise the Titanic. That is, I've received a lot of messages and inquiries about it, especially on Instagram. And I last I checked, they have quite a few followers on Instagram growing. And we, you know, this is, like I said, a new thing. So we're not here to try to dissect anything too specifically or try to throw any names in the mud or anything like that. But I am curious to just sort of discuss the concept, because like when you came on the podcast before, what we talked about so much was was this commercialization money making of Titanic. I've gotten a lot of great emails about that episode we did, as I know you've mentioned you have as well. I think people really respected the respectful way in which we discussed that. And I got an email from a listener just a week or two ago that had stumbled upon that episode. And the subject line of the email was a commendation. I'm like, what is this? But he basically like, thank you for the award, sir. I don't know. I don't know you.
My special award to you.
It's just like a little, what if there was like a little, you know, certificate attached to the PDF? But he said, you know, but his message was basically, I don't agree with everything you said in that episode, but I haven't ever heard anybody so respectfully talk about all the sides of this so well as you guys did. And so, so I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on this too. The basics that we know are that there is a movement that is on some level connected to the Save the Titanic Lighthouse movement. Some of the same people are involved with both projects. And that the movement, the new Raise the Titanic movement, is this idea that parts of the ship, not the whole ship, as the name would lead you to believe, that parts of the ship should be brought up and put in a museum, and that the support of some Titanic descendants is a big part of this. So that's what we know. There's a GoFundMe right now going for it. And my Instagram followers will know that I did very openly caution them against, you know, the curiosity is one thing, but I did sort of put my two cents in and say, like, so, I mean, my opinion is take a deep breath and like, let's see what this is, see what develops. That's a very, very large and foreboding goal for an organization to have. And in terms of the descendants being involved, that's a whole nother, you know, like can of worms. But the question is like, when does it end, right? So do we get to the point where there's nothing left of Titanic because everything's been brought up? So what are your thoughts about kind of seeing that emerge just generally? Like, we're right back to a Raise the Titanic movement, which we've been in some form or fashion since 1912. You know, there's a book that came out last year. I did an episode on called Sinkable, and it's pretty academically researched. It's a pretty good book. And it's just a complete layout of like all the different Raise the Titanic movements there have been over the years. So where does this one fit in? It just sort of blows my mind.
I think it's emblematic, actually, of where movements, campaigns have kind of been going. And this is a little bit kind of geeky because this is sort of the world that I'm in. I run sort of campaigns for charities and politicians and social movements and things like that. And I am a little bit tired of people just starting an Instagram account and calling it a campaign, because actually to affect real change, and it doesn't really matter what that change is. So my agency, like, we focus specifically on progressive change. So it's, you know, increasing access to healthcare, or getting more women elected, or, you know, helping children access arts or whatever it is. But to affect that really, it's a lot of work. And it's strategic, and it's hard, and it's long, really long. Some of these campaigns go on for years and years and years. And then at the end, maybe you just win a bit of your goal. You don't get all of what you want. You get a bit of what you want. And so there is something I find difficult about just seeing an account pop up and it's like, let's just do this. And it's like, well, okay, maybe, but there's more to it than that. And I think with this one specifically, I mean, I don't know about you, but it really felt like it just came out of nowhere. Like, one day I just went on Instagram and suddenly I was just seeing this kind of, let's raise the Titanic, even though, as you say, it's not quite that.
Yeah. What came to my feed first, and of course, you know, on my Unsinkable account on Instagram, of course, Instagram is like, wow, this person, you know, definitely needs all the Titanic stuff. And then the algorithm is weird. It's also thrown me some weird curveballs lately. I don't think this algorithm's off, but that's another story. But so the first thing I saw was them, you know, using a James Cameron quote that was, you know, and the quote was, there are no bodies down here. And the quote was used in support of, okay, sure, it's fine to bring up artifacts.
It's not a grave site.
Yeah, because it's not a grave site. And this has been And not to dip too much into RMS Titanic Inc., we've talked about that, and you know, people can go to our episode and sort of learn some more about that, and that is important. But you know, there has long been the debate in the community about the artifacts, and this has always been the pivot point of the argument: is like, yeah. Is it a gravesite and were their bodies, or are their bodies? And so I think this mm-hmm. campaign, and this is just me assuming this, obviously this part can't be fact, but it seems to me that they're using that quote to sort of say, look, the first and foremost, you know, like popular expert on Titanic is telling us there's no bodies down there. So it's not a gravesite. I just don't think the argument can be simplified that much. And it does make me nervous to see, I agree, to see a social media account pop up and for people to just follow it and think like, wow, well, this just exists now. I don't even think it really, you know, personally, it doesn't seem like it really does yet. Like you said, it takes often years. It takes a group of experts. It takes money. You cannot throw a social media account up and something just exists. I mean, my podcast, yeah. I told you, my podcast is the perfect example. I don't do much social media. I got off of Facebook years ago. I do not do TikTok because my husband told me, TikTok, well, we won't get into that, but he's a software engineer and he knows how that works. And he's like, that is not in our home. And I agree. But like, I don't do social media except for Instagram. And so if someone said, let's check out the popularity of Unsinkable, the Titanic podcast, and they didn't know to go to like the apps you can go to see the rankings, and they just went to look at my Instagram, they'd be like, oh, you know, like 1600 followers, that's decent. Like, okay, probably not very popular. But like, I see my download numbers. And I know that like for me, my product being the podcast, like that is going out into the world on a pretty larger scale than I ever imagined. And my social media following does not reflect that at all because that's not where I've put my energy. Where I have put my energy is into an actual solid product that goes out into the world as a podcast. And so I just think it's dangerous to live in a world where we assume that social media following is there's a direct correlation to success. I just categorically reject that.
But that is like the world in which we have fallen into and the kind of like influencer culture and social media has kind of taken over everything. And I think that you are right that the kind of the end product has suffered as a result of that. And you see that with everything, right? I know that we've talked about this before, but you know, the quality of film, as in like cinema films, has degraded because we are now just churning out much kind of CGI Marvel stuff as we can.
And then like remakes, reboots,
re-releases, all this sort of stuff. And I think like one of the things that we agree on is that obviously, you know, we love Titanic, but Titanic was also a moment in time in which we still made proper films where you went out and you got 1,000 extras, you went out and you built the set. And yes, there's a bit of CGI and there's a little bit of kind of like, okay, we can't quite do that. So can we just bring in a bit of this or bring in a bit of that?
Yeah, and a couple
but it
of
was
scenes.
Still
like
a
you can
craft.
See,
yeah.
You can see the seams, like when the funnel falls or whatever, you know, we've talked about that. But like, but you forgive them in that film because every 99.7% of the shots are what you're saying. It's like, it's like Ben-Hur or something, right? Like there were actually crowds and there were actually sets and props and you could touch it and you could feel it. And that,
but that craft has been lost. And I think that is where it is not just in the cinema industry. Like we are seeing that across the board. And I think to your point about sort of social media followers, that's where we are. You are delivering a high quality service product that people can consume. And okay, so maybe that doesn't necessarily relate to the number of followers you've got, but it doesn't take away from the high level you're providing.
And both I think can exist. I mean, I know some podcasts that have really invested in their social media following as well. And so I, you know, the things they do correlate. And I do think there's a lot of good that can come from advertising podcasts on social media, having really, you know, so that is not to knock that at all. And if tomorrow I woke up and I had, you know, 10,000 more followers because I was featured on something and it correlated to an Instagram surge, I certainly wouldn't reject that. You know, I mean, I would like to think that I would continue to use my platform for good. So I certainly don't mean to come off as judgy or, you know, like it definitely can coexist. I just don't think that one has to follow the other or vice versa.
No, but I think that there is a broader kind of concern for me around the authenticity of these. So followers doesn't equal you know,
legitimacy is probably exactly. the best way to say it.
Yes. That's why you're the historian.
Well, and that's, but I think we're on the exact same page. Like, that's why it makes me nervous, because I worry that, you know, say this Raise the Titanic account on Instagram gets 10,000 followers. I worry that the average person comes across that, sees that, and thinks, oh, wow, this must be like a real thing, you know, and goes and gives money. And then maybe it's not clear where their money's going.
Absolutely not. And that is a really, really, really important point. But I think as well, the, you know, we don't want to talk about RMS Titanic Inc. too much, but there is a bottom line here, which is that RMS Titanic is the one in charge of the wreck. Yeah. Like, they decide.
Do have, whether you hate it or love it or are neutral about it. And we talked about
the facts.
The facts is they do have control over this wreck. Yeah.
So this idea that, so on their website, they list five things they want to raise. Mm-hmm. It's a boiler, the port and starboard propellers, the port and starboard anchors, the Marconi radio, and the whole forward bow section.
Yes.
And which the thing is... But the interesting thing there, of course, is that RMS Titanic Inc. has already said multiple times that they want to go and get the Marconi radio. In fact, they are planning to do it in May. They are going to go down. They are saying they're not, but they are going to go down. They are going to try and retrieve that Marconi radio, despite it being ruled as illegal. They're just going to do it anyway.
Which again, and we're not, like, again, we're not condoning them, you know, like, and people can go back and listen to our episode from last year, but I mean, that's in itself 8,000 cans of very squiggly worms, but to your point, yeah, I mean, they have some sort of, you know, again, whether you agree or not, like, they have this control over what gets brought up and how it gets mm-hmm. brought up. They're in mm-hmm. their own legal battles about what's legal for them or not. Mm-hmm. And so if the new movement were to actually gain traction, there is a whole legality there that would be, it's a pretty thick wall to break through in itself.
And listen, RMS Titanic Inc. don't play around. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are guys
who
have taken countries to court and won. You know, they have taken the US government to court and won. Yes. So they are not, you know, just amateurs.
No, they are not going to just say, sure. I mean, again.
Yeah, help yourself. Like,
this is all speculation. I have to be careful from a legal standpoint and say, like, this part is all speculation, but I imagine they wouldn't just say, sure, that sounds great. You get down and get what you want, like, right there. And then we'll, you know, and so there is this question of, should things be brought up at all, which we've already talked about that. And everyone falls on a spectrum with that, I think. Mm-hmm. And then there is the question of whether RMS Titanic Inc. should be the sole salvager of the wreck or not. So here we already have, like, it's like a layer cake. We've already got two thick layers. And then adding on top of that, if we do agree that artifacts should be brought up, should it only be RMS Titanic Inc.? Should it also be anybody who wants to do it, like this organization? And if that's the case, she'll just be stripped bare. Because and this is just speaking for me, LA Beatles right now, but people know how I feel about RMS Titanic Inc. I have a ton of questions, a ton of doubts, a ton of points of anger. Just as a human being, I don't love their processes. And I have a lot of questions about where the artifacts should actually be in my own ideas. But if you remove that for a moment from it, where I am scared is that if there is this realization or this legal ruling at some point that, sure, anybody can go get whatever they want, like, it'll all be gone. There are a lot of people with very deep pockets in this world that, if given the chance, will rush there to get the stuff to make money off of it. And
this is underscored by what we just talked about with Clive Palmer, is you're talking about someone who is worth, what was it, 25 billion or something.
Yeah.
You know, these are not, you're not talking about people like yourself who have dedicated, you know, so many years to researching and understanding and sharing the story of Titanic. And, you know, everyone in the Titanic community does their bit, right? They have, as I said before, like, you choose the bit that fascinates you and the bit that you want to do and that's research
the part
and
you
talk
get it you surgically yeah. get in and then that's your specialty but, and yeah
but very few of these people have that history. You're talking about people who've just gone, well, I'm rich now, I can do that, okay, well, I'll just
yeah, like this new movement popped up and they actually hired people and they, and this is all just assuming they can make it happen, which I have my doubts. But, you know, just say in a perfect world, they do raise a bunch of money and they do find a team to do it and they do bring things up and this new museum does exist. That's just going to tell anybody with enough money in the world who can assemble a team, sure, go get it, you know? It scares like the hell out of me, to be perfectly honest. And I also have, you know, questions about the descendants' involvement. And certainly not, I mean, I have met some descendants and been very fortunate too. And some of them are very vocal in the Titanic community. Some of them aren't. And there's a spectrum there. And I respect that. That is a fine line as well. If you are the descendant of someone of a tragedy, what are you owed? Like what? I don't know. I think that's a really scary fine line to tread as well. I mean, everyone who listens to the podcast knows I'm a historian of the U.S. South. Before Titanic pulled me in, I spent many, many years studying the U.S. South, the history of slavery, for example, in America. I mean, it's a slippery slope to then go down the line of like proving genealogies or proving who is owed what or whose relative was involved in what part of the tragedy. Unfortunately, you know, it's like the conversations with Titan when it happened last year. Like, it seems like if you're wealthy and white and that's who you're discussing, then like, sure, let's have this really frilly conversation about making money off of artifacts or like proving our genealogy and like, you know, having some sort of like epic reunion of descendants. Like, I mean, go to any plantation in the South that still exists. And there are all these conversations about how to make money off of this. Like nobody's even entertaining the idea of helping descendants of slaves, like make some or receive some sort of reparations for the horrible crimes their ancestors went through. And so it angers me as a historian, to be blunt, to that conversation is very, very fraught, you know, and not that it shouldn't exist and maybe we should have it on lots of different levels. But to me, that's a slippery slope in itself.
I think you raised that. It's funny you talked there about the Titan because recently when people find out that I'm a Titanic kind of, whether you want to call it Titaniac or Titanic or whatever, they say, oh, you must have been just losing your mind when the Titan submarine happened. Like it must have just been all you wanted to talk about. And it's funny that you said there about how, you know, when it's white, rich men were suddenly fascinated by it. And that is also the legacy of Titanic, is that people want to know about the billionaires on Titanic and the really rich people.
But there was
this just, you couldn't have written it better, that there was this perfect juxtaposition when the Titan thing was happening, which is that you had some billionaires going down to see this wreck. So, you know, but basically nobody can afford to do it unless you're absolutely mega wealthy. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there was the ship just that sank off Greece that was filled with migrants and killed 80 people, 100 people, I think it was, and 500 plus people missing. Nothing. I remember hearing an interview on the news where the presenter asked someone from I can't quite remember where they were from, but they were from the sort of shipping world, and they said, you know, what do you think about the response to the Titan disaster? And the person who had been involved in this kind of recovery project responded, well, you know, that's the maritime industry. When someone is in distress, we all come together, we do what we can to help them. And I sat there thinking, well, no.
No, obviously not.
Every day people are drowning at sea because of this, you know, this migrant and refugee crisis that, you know, no country really wants to take responsibility mm-hmm. for, least of all our two countries.
Least of all America. Yeah, I'll say
and,
it.
But
yeah.
no one wants to hold their hands up and deal with that problem. Then, but a couple of billionaires go down to Titanic and listen, every life lost is a tragedy. But you're talking about 5 or 6 people versus hundreds of people who are fleeing war and, you know, all these terrible things. So it's
100%. And, you know, I opened up this season with an episode on PH Nargiole. I mean, obviously, like, I have great respect for the people that have spent their life researching Titanic, going down to the wreck. I mean, because they exist, and like PH Nargiole, like, because of the work he did, I can do the research that I need to do. I can talk about what I want to talk about with Titanic. So I have a great reverence for the work that he did. And so, and every life is really valuable. And it was a horrible tragedy, but I absolutely 100% agree with you. You know, and they interviewed James Cameron after they announced, you know, we've found some of the debris. These people are definitely dead. You know, James Cameron made the news cycles. And he said, you know, I knew they were gone the minute, you know, he did have a little bit of insider info that there had been the sonic boom reported in the area from the Navy. But he said, you know, I know because of how these subs are designed. He said, they were gone. I started mourning for the loss of my friend the minute I heard the news because I knew he was gone. And instead there was, you know, there was so much money and news coverage spent to try. I don't know. I just, and it almost.
The news coverage was phenomenal.
It was just
phenomenal.
Out of this world.
It really was. I mean, so it speaks to, again, the question that we were asked Titanic. About Titanic, you know, it endures. But I think going back to the kind of raise the Titanic stuff, like in that kind of cycle of whether it's news about Titanic, as you were just saying, or whether it's about social media kind of coverage, you know, Titanic seems to just never ever go away. But I think we are reaching, or we have probably already reached, a point at which social media kind of algorithms and consumption of social media and consumption of kind of digital platforms, along with the power and the pull and the kind of evergreen territory that Titanic is in, that combination of those two things can be really powerful and could be a force for incredible good. And you could, for example, start a podcast and tell people, you know, all these incredible stories, and it gives you a platform to do that. But it can also allow for people to just decide, I'm going to raise the Titanic. And it doesn't answer the the litany of moral, ethical, and legal questions, because the platforms don't allow for that to happen. It's just, we're going to raise the Titanic. Great, let's go for it. And I think
that's
where we've landed with this stuff.
And also that, you know, the proliferation of social media in our lives and the value that we put behind it. Because, I mean, I like to think, not me personally, but as a society as a whole, we have put a lot of credence and value behind influencers, behind creating social media content. And we have, as a society, decided, like, these are important and these people have a say in what we should do every day. And so to me, that's a very dangerous concept, but that's, again, a conversation for another day. So if someone throws up a picture of the shipwreck, which they probably don't even have the copyright to use, and they just make a post that says, this is what we're going to do, and this is what's, you know, what product is there? Like, absolutely nothing, you know? In fact, could legally be a problem, because maybe they don't even have the right to use that image, and everything has become so gray on social media. And then if I'm the average, just, you know, kind of into Titanic, not, I don't know, I just follow a few accounts and that's what I do, and I see that, is it like a moral quandary that if I see that, I might accidentally think, like, oh, that's a real movement that's happening and they're going to raise the Titanic? And, like, I don't know. I don't know what the answers are to this. Like, I think with social media, there are so many answers and we don't have, or so many questions and we don't have the answers yet. And it will take time.
Yeah. And I think you have to, well, for me, I would always go back to the fundamental question, which is sort of what we grappled with in the other episode I was on when we were talking about the sort of commercialization of Titanic, is what is the benefit of this? So are you raising these items for, fill in the blank, is it because you really genuinely want to tell the story of Titanic? Is it because you want to research? Is it because you want to, you know, inspire a new generation of people to be fascinated by Titanic? Yeah. That is ultimately for me, the kind of question that you have to answer, and it has to be, you know, it has to be rooted in the truth. And I think, you know, we keep saying we're not talking about RMS Titanic Inc., but it's quite difficult not to. And that,
it's hard not
you know,
to.
They had that whole kind of bankruptcy sham, which to me showed that they were not actually that interested in telling the story of Titanic. It was about making money. If you were to make a public commitment somehow and say, listen, we want to raise this, 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 and we guarantee they are going to be on public display for life, you can access them in these museums or these public spaces.
And maybe then you protected can start by a nonprofit, like
yes, or an independent kind of observer or whatever it is. But I think then you can start, for me personally, you can start to have a conversation that's like, okay, we need to tackle this kind of moral ethical question about whether Titanic is a gravesite or not. We need to, you know, everyone lands somewhere on that in that space, but we can at least agree this is going to be for public benefit, not to be auctioned off to millionaires and billionaires. And I think we just don't know any of that.
We don't know enough
now.
Information. Like with this new movement, does that mean that the items are going to be held in private hands? And that means that at any moment, whoever technically owns them could sell them to anybody they want. You know, the question of the descendants is really poignant to me because of my historical research. I mean, just because I happen to be the great-great-grandson of someone who happened to be on Titanic, does that mean that I'm due money from these artifacts? Like, I personally think not. And then what is the, I'll go ahead and say it. Then like, what is the intent of the descendants? Like, are they just trying to make money off of who they happen to be the great-great-granddaughter of, you know? And I have, as a historian, I take issue with that for some reasons I've already named and for lots of other ones. I don't know that I feel comfortable with that. I don't personally think that if someone happens to be the great-great-granddaughter of someone, that means they have some sort of connection to it. Like, I don't know. I've talked to descendants where they're like, yeah, I didn't find out until, you know, I was 25 that my great-great-uncle was on Titanic, and like, doesn't mean that much to me, but I guess it's kind of cool. And like, should that person just like get a check? Like, just, you know, like, I don't think so, you know? And so if I sound worked up, it's because I just like, I have so much invested in, you know, for 20 some odd years now, I have spent so much of my life researching and trying to tell these human stories and backing it up with research. And also like, trying to just do good with the stories I tell, you know, like, and so these questions to the average person probably maybe don't matter, but to me, there's so much at stake in these questions.
But I think it comes back again to what I was saying before about intent, right? Is that you, what is your intention behind this, right? You have good intentions with Titanic. As I say, you're sharing a story and you're informing people and, you know, people clearly really love it and they want to hear more and you're asking questions that other people won't and all the rest of it. But we can and have and probably will debate for the rest of our lives about the ethics and morals of raising things from Titanic, whether it's artifacts or the wreck itself. Mm-hmm. But what is the purpose? Why are you doing that? Is it because you genuinely really care about the story of Titanic? In which case, you're having a very, very different conversation to there's money down there. You know, and I think that for me is like, that's where you just come back to, because I will have a very, very different conversation with any other Titanic person based on that. Because if you are purely in it because you want to make money and you just think, listen, I raise the wreck and I raise a boiler and I raise whatever, I can make a ton of money by loaning this out or auctioning it off, then we're in a different space, right? We're clearly in a different space. But if you are saying, I want to raise this because I want to put it on public display, I want the world to see the greatest ship of all time, I want people to learn about this, I want to inspire a new generation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then we can still have a debate about the ethics and morals of that, but at least your intention is in a different place. And I think that's,
intention
I'm not
matters.
Sure
and
how
do you meter that? How do you regulate that? I don't know what the answer to that is, but intention absolutely matters. You know, if there was a group of descendants that were really invested in research and felt really connected to their ancestors and said, yeah, I mean, we found a pocket watch and fill in the blank artifacts, and this means a lot to us, and we want to travel the world showing these off, and we feel really richly connected to it. Who am I to question their intention? Like, if they tell me that's what their intention is, I, as a human, I should believe them. You know, I don't have any reason not to. But I, yeah, it matters. Intention matters. And I think in these situations we have, there's got to be a way to meter that or I don't know.
Attached to that, I think there is like a logistical thing for me that's quite important, that there is no independent monitoring of this. And so in most things, particularly like in the UK, for example, in my industry, in politics, there are independent bodies that will regulate certain things. So you can't just spend unlimited amounts of money. You can't just say what you want. You can't, you know, there are people and organizations in place to be like, okay, no, that's not true. Or no, you can't spend that much money. With this, there isn't.
No, there's not. There's no regulation with anything.
There is just this company that owns it, and that's that. And I think, again, it seems like such a moot point to be sitting on a podcast being like, well, if you're going to do it, you need like a regulator. But I really do believe that there should be a truly independent organization or group of people who monitor. And by monitor, I mean literally go with them to the wreck.
Yes.
Make sure that what they are doing.
Yes.
Is what they say they are doing. And
there's got to be a board of directors in any situation like this. There has got to be a board of directors with representation from multiple angles, from a conservationist angle, from a scientist, oceanographer. There should be a perfect board of directors for this would be a couple of descendants. Sure, that's great. But also we need conservationists. We need PR marketing team. We need scientists. We need oceanographers. You know, we need James Cameron, like no joke, but like we need the people that are experts. Like I worry about our culture. There seems to be such a loss of expertise across the board. Like if there was a board for something like this, like you would be an amazing candidate to like come in as a neutral person because you have not only do you have your PR and marketing and political experience, but you've got the experience of being a lifelong Titanic person. You've got it's like, yes, like a committee of people that I just volunteered Jewish tribute. But like a committee.
I'll take it. If you're listening, if you're going down to the rec, let me know.
Let him know. And then I'll just come in, make a podcast episode about it. So I don't have to.
I'll FaceTime you while I'm down there.
Yeah, just FaceTime me everything. I don't want to be there. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that to me would be the perfect world, right? Like you have a team of experts that are monitoring this. And again, to do all of this, it just takes many, many years, unfortunately. And I think, you know, anyone listening to this that has kind of seen that stuff pop up on social media, just my recommendation would just be cautious. Like, sure, it's fun to follow along, but just be cautious at what you get pulled into, because between creating a social media account and actually seeing those artifacts brought up into the sunlight is, you know, we're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars and hundreds
tens
and thousands
of millions.
Yeah. And thousands of hours of work from experts that would be, I mean, it took years of tries with a very scientific team to bring up the big piece that's now in Las Vegas. I mean, we're talking multiple tries. They went out, it fell one time and they couldn't get it. I mean, it's not a simple process. And
what was that, 20 something years ago?
Yeah, that would have been like 26 years, 27 years ago. So
think how much the wreck has degraded now, and you're talking about bringing up the bow. And you know, I mean, it's funny because as well with the bow, I mean, I felt this, I was speaking to you about it. I went to Pigeon Forge and they have, you know, the replica of the Grand Staircase, and it always makes me laugh because I was excited about it because I'm a fan of the film. But as we know, the staircase for people in Titanic was just a staircase. It just took you from this deck to that deck.
It also was the site of probably many people's deaths at the end, you know, as the film shows us. So, you know, everything is, I like the points that you've made in this conversation are so poignant, like that a lot of things are like what you make of them, you know, and I talk about this a lot on the podcast too, in terms of like the mythology of Titanic. It all means different things to us, and different people or different artifacts or different parts of the ship. I mean, you know, Pigeon Forge creating the iconic staircase is a beautiful thing. It means something different probably to everybody that walks on it. I did just check the time, and unfortunately, we do have to. I have these children that need to be picked up from from school. Can you believe it? I have to act, I'm expected to pick up my children from school, like the heresy. But I know I wish we could talk forever. But I guess my, you know, a closing thought would be like, do you think that someone like me that is, and there are a lot of us, or someone like you that's very invested in Titanic and what it means, what the ethics of its memorialization mean, like, should we be worried? Like, I don't know. I just like, it's, it seems like, I mean, are we headed in like a scary direction? Or do you think this is just like the typical cycle of like a couple of, you know, outlying things that seem a little crazy, but ultimately we're still in the right direction? I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer to that question. It just, you know, calling this sort of the emergency meeting, it does feel that way because I'm a little concerned about the direction of the commercialization here.
Well, I wrote a piece about the kind of artifact debate, which you shared last time I was on, and I titled it The Battle for the Soul of Titanic, because I do think that there is a fundamental battle over the future of Titanic. And I think history, including very recent history, particularly in the US and UK, teaches us that if we ignore these kind of populist movements, they can lead to pretty dark places. Yes. And 100%. I'm not comparing the kind of Titanic artifact debate to Donald Trump or Brexit or whatever, but there is enough recent history for us to know that just ignoring it, no matter how absurd we may think it is a good idea. And I think, you know, it was really funny that when I sent this article to my sister-in-law and I said, what do you think about this, you know, piece, that if you could have a look at it? And she was like, everything's a battle for the soul of something with you. And I was like, but it really, you know.
But it is. I mean, not every time, but it often is. Yeah.
Yeah. And particularly at the moment. But I think, you know, in this conversation, you're saying, should we be worried? And I think for me, I think the answer is yes. I think that we are in a place right now that is, I think it is true that Titanic's kind of historical, cultural, societal impact will outlive whatever profiteering and kind of questionable behavior any person, company, whatever is doing. But I think that there is a question about the grip that certain people and organizations have on Titanic that demands our attention and some action, and which can be as simple as what we just talked about, being an independent body or organization that oversees this.
Oh, that would be incredible. I think that should be the end goal for anybody that has well-meaning intentions and all of that.
Exactly. Yes. And if you are as faithful as you say you are, then you wouldn't have a problem with that, right? It would be fine for you to be overseen, because what you're doing is to your word. And I think that for me is why I describe it as this kind of battle for the soul of Titanic, because it's not about you know, how much money can, well, I mean, to some degree it is, but it's not just about how much money can I make, or, you know, how can I tell a story, or here's another museum or another artifact. Like, we are talking about the fundamental ethics and morals of how we remember and honor and tell the story of Titanic. And I close that piece by saying that this question is now bigger than and more important and greater than the 73-year mission that it took to find her at the bottom of the ocean, because we're now, right, we know where she is. Great, like one of the most incredible discoveries probably of all time. But we are now in a place of like, great, we have that. But we now have to answer the question about what we do with that, how we tell that story, how we remember, how we honor it. And I'm not sure that we have come to a great place on that. And everyone will have their own opinion. But I think, yes, if you are in the position that I think you and I are, we're pretty aligned, I think this is a pretty critical stage in what I call the battle for the soul of Titanic.
I agree. And I think you put it so eloquently. I just will sort of add an echo here that, yes, I mean, I think it is important to take a step, even if it feels small. It's important to take a stand when you feel, whether it's a misrepresentation or if you feel there's a movement building that doesn't value expertise. It may seem like a small thing to, like, you know, make a comment that, like, asks a crucial question, you know, whether it's on social media or send an email or, but do it. You know, I mean, my thing is, like, yes, everybody do it. If the red flags are raised in your mind, you know, about this or about anything in life, like, there's no small gesture. Like, it is important, as we've seen in our world, as you so well put over the past few years, you know, if you just say, like, oh, that movement won't get any traction or that thing won't get any traction, that's just, you know, that's the idiots over there doing that. Like, no, unfortunately, a lot of times they can do great damage, horrible damage. And so it's not a small act to, you know, to make a point. If you feel uncomfortable with how something is being represented, say it, you know, send the email, say the thing, make the comment. People need to be held accountable, and expertise is really, really important. And I think we are at a really critical moment with how Titanic is going to be represented moving forward. And we've skated around it the whole conversation, but of course, like, RMS Titanic Inc. is at the core of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And we touched on a lot of that the last time you were here. And I think now this movement is at the core of that. And I think if you're a listener to this podcast and you're invested in Titanic, I think the most important thing is just to have, for right now, is just to have these questions in your mind and be aware of them and read pieces like you've written, you know, like, educate yourself. Like, expertise is just the core of everything. Like, get information, read, you know, research, listen to interviews, find out as much information as you can, you know, the danger of
social media. And don't be afraid not to be an expert. I think this is one of the things
that's a good point.
Get a bit nervous that they don't know everything. And as I said before, you are not the be-all and end-all of knowledge of Titanic. I am not the be-all and end-all of knowledge of Titanic. I have, you know, particular kind of interest and expertise in this part of the story, which is why, you know, you asked me to talk about the commercialization and RMST and all this sort of stuff, because that's kind of that and the sort of media legacy. That's my bit of Titanic that I know. And, you know, so I think you have to be absolutely ready to say, okay, I don't know about that. I'm going to ask some questions, or I'm going to find out something, you know, but don't be...
Yeah, don't afraid. Be scared. Not everyone is going to be, expertise is important, but not everybody is going to be an expert. What I mean by expertise is important is that if you want to be educated, go to sources that are, you know, like, I don't know, when people ask me, what's the Titanic book I should read? I always tell them Gareth Russell's book, right? Ship of Dreams, because it's this, like, beautiful combination of wonderful prose with all of this academic research that he went into the archives to do. And he really loved putting that book together. You can tell with how he talked about it. And, like, he grew up with his grandfather, I think, like, telling stories about the ship being built. And, you know, and so for example, that's where I send people if they've never read a Titanic book, because his passion is obvious, but also his expertise is obvious. So, like, that's what I mean, is, like, just make sure it's not just about clicking the follow button on a social media account, you know, like, dig deeper, read a book, read some articles, investigate and demand information from people. You know, I think that's the number one thing I instill in my children, who are 7 and 9, and they're going to grow up in this world that's saturated with everything social media and everything AI. And, you know, but what I'm trying to instill in them is, yeah, but there's always this key moment in any process where you've got to gather information, and you can't make your decision until you have the information and you have some data. And I use the word data a lot because I think it's so important. So all that to say, I think we just kind of wanted to give people something to chew on today, you know, just to
start a debate.
just start a debate. I mean, you're right. I mean, there is a debate for the soul of Titanic going on. It's been going on for 113 years, and it will continue to go on. And anybody listening to this podcast, like, you can be a voice in that, you know, you can be an important part of that. And maybe if enough people speak up and enough people show interest, then one day there is like the, you know, perfectly formed, like, board of directors that helps run this, or helps efforts like the new Raise the Titanic movement. Maybe if there was some governing bodies to help guide them or help regulate things, then it would be a different story. So anyway, we probably just asked more questions than we answered. But I think that's the
we've not actually helped at all. Sorry.
No. Honestly, like truly, this is the last thing I'll say. I always say I'm going to stop and I never do. I think like with Titanic, it's why I started the podcast. And I mean, we know all the same old stories. Like we know Aster on the ship. We know, like, I don't know. I just feel like if Titanic is going to, it's always going to be relevant because it, like you said, it'll never go away. But if we're going to invigorate the research and invigorate the memorialization and really do things the right way, like we have to have these conversations and we can't let the same people control the conversation. We have to step out of the box. And some people might call us crazy. And that's okay. Like I've been called worse, you know, and like, I just appreciate you coming on to have these conversations, to lend your particular set of skills and expertise to this. I think you're such a valuable member of a modern, progressive, and forward moving Titanic community, which is the community that I definitely want to be a part of. And I think you're an extremely important voice in that community. So that's why I wanted to have you on again, and I'll have you on again. You can come on every week if you want, like, honestly. But thank you for taking the time. I think that the perspective that you bring to it all is really crucial for people to hear. So thank you.
Not at all. Well, thank you for giving me and everyone else the platform.
Absolutely. And I'm sure we'll devise another way to get you on again soon, because it's, I mean, there's always issues brewing with Titanic. Yes.
There always is. Can I give a quick plug before I go?
Oh yeah. I was going to ask. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was going to say, for anyone that doesn't know, as if anyone on this podcast knew who I am, but I just moved to New York.
I know what you're about to do. And yeah. It's perfect, because I promised you I would mention it on an episode, but you mentioning it yourself is better.
Well, I just thought, I'm like, I'm just, now no, that no, I'm here. So I just moved to New York and I do not know anyone here. I have like two friends who are great and I love them and they've been so welcoming.
Hi, Pablo's two friends.
Yeah, Will and Theo, who probably will listen to this because they're so wonderful and enthusiastic.
I love it. Well, hello.
And yeah, so they're my two friends in New York, which is great. And I'm so grateful for that. But I am trying to make new friends. And there's this great app and website called Meetup. And so I have started one for people who are interested in Titanic. So if you live in New York and you want to basically just hang out and talk about Titanic, basically like this podcast, but in person.
Do you want to live this podcast in person?
Yeah, exactly. What part of that could possibly not be appealing?
What could go wrong? But also, maybe think about living this podcast in person, but also adding in like a coffee or a beer.
Yes.
Or
yes. Yeah. Imagine how much better talking about Titanic could be if you do it with food and drinks.
Throw in some vodka, what could happen?
This is
a nice little dram of whiskey, maybe. Yeah, like, some Irish whiskey is appropriate. But okay, so it's through Meetup, and what is the group called?
So you can just go to meetup.com/Titanic. And we are having our first meetup in April, and we're meeting in the Jane Hotel, which you and other people will probably know is obviously where a lot of survivors were taken.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
And if you've not been, it's an incredible, like absolutely stunning interior of the hotel. If you live in New York and you want to talk about Titanic.
And I'm curious to see, definitely, you know, like throw a photo up of the group on Instagram or something. According to my download data, quite a few people from, you know, in the city listen. So I imagine like this will reach the ears of quite a few Titaniacs in your neck of the woods. So yeah, and I'll put the link in the show notes too, just to make it easy. But yeah, I mean, I think this is going back to what we said, like this is how it happens, right? Like let's get people together, have conversations, and you know, and bring Titanic. Let's bring it with us into like a more modern era of thinking about her and studying her. And like, part of that is like having fun. I mean, yes, it's a somber event, But like part of it is bonding over a shared interest. And there's such joy in that, even if the interest does involve tragedy, there's such joy and humor in like hanging out and talking about something that you love.
Well, and just expressing. So. Yeah, exactly. Expressing a thing you love. Like I always say that it's, you know, I kind of need people like you in my life because you just need to get it out. It's like, it's
you just, have to. Gotta, I mean, you've got oh this, my like, gosh. Itch, yes.
Like, I need to like, just talk about it.
I have, like, I was telling my husband this the other day, like, I have my Titanic people, I have my Outlander people. People who listen to the podcast know, like, I am in at the level of Titanic on Outlander too, and like just own it, like unashamed. And so like I have friends where like I have to get my Outlander stuff out, you know, and like we text constantly. And anyway, so well, that is amazing. I'll make sure to link that. And I do have to go, but it's always sad to tell you bye. And of course we'll talk soon. But thank you so much. This has been
no lovely. Worries. Thank you so much for having me.